welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. In this episode of the show, I am joined by none other than longtime friend Peter Jennings. You might know him as CSU Ram 88, one of the long-term big winners in the daily fantasy community, one of the owners of Fantasy Labs, one of the partners of the Action Network, and someone who I think has a lot of really good insight as to where the daily fantasy sports speculation, sports betting, season-long fantasy sports. I just think Peter has a lot of really good insights on the direction that our industry is going. We also talked a little bit about cryptocurrency and kind of Peter's journey through the world of poker and DFS, and you know what life is like for him now that he's not grinding quite so hard. I think this is a really enjoyable episode. I think if you guys really liked the episodes with Dink and Wiggins, Jeff Collins, I think this will be another similarly interesting listen for you guys. Of course, we are sponsored by rotoexperts.com. You can use the promo code MATIC to get 10% off of your 365-day subscription. We are also sponsored by Daily Roto, the best daily fantasy projections in the industry. You can get 10% off there using the promo code Rory. As always, leaving a rating and review on iTunes is incredibly appreciated. And if you want to hear more of the show, you can subscribe to the Patreon, patreon.com/takecast, bonus episodes of the show, some showdown breakdowns, more stuff coming there for you guys. And now let's get into the episode. All right, everyone, would love to welcome in my good friend, Peter Jennings. You probably know him as CSU Ram 88. I've been waiting for the right time to have you on the show, and I figured we would both have a good little lull right now before football gets too crazy. Peter, how you doing, buddy?
Doing well, man. Actually, in the football streets, doing a lot of best ball, and yeah, it's a good summer. We were talking pre-pod about golf, so can't complain. The summers are really nice here in Colorado. I've been traveling and stoked to be on the TakeCast. This thing's blown up, dude.
You know, it's doing all right. Very, very glad to have you on because people want to know. They want to know the CSU story. They see the man holding the check, you know, and on the DraftKings podium. They see him grinding the golf. Like, people know who you are, but I don't know if a ton of people who listen to this podcast know the story. So in your words, how do you go from being a beer vendor at Coors to being CSU Ram 88?
Yeah, it's funny you bring up beer vending. That was actually a huge part of just getting a bankroll started initially for poker. Selling beer on commission at sporting events and concerts turns out to be pretty lucrative for a high school and college kid. So that was a huge part of being able to be more entrepreneurial, just having capital to invest. Started out in poker. You know, in college, I got a finance degree, but I really studied poker more than anything. Caught some of the good years online, but definitely was getting more efficient, especially before Black Friday. But there were still some big edges, and that was my main focus. Black Friday happened, had to get a real job for a little bit of time as a stockbroker, but luckily DFS. I'd been playing FanDuel, you know, before Black Friday, but there just wasn't a big enough market to make a living. And while I was at Charles Schwab, fortunately, FanDuel started to take off, and when I qualified for that FanDuel football championship, I quit my job. And the luckiest moment for sure wasn't the $1 million win. It was the 150K win, the first six-figure prize, because that's when I quit my job and, like, really took a risk on DFS.
So that was, like, 2014 was that first FanDuel final, or 2015?
2012.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
so at this point, I didn't even have a FanDuel account then.
And still, that was literally the first time there had been a six-figure prize. So keep in mind, like, the volume. It just, like, I wanted to play a lot during them, but, like, you could only get a couple thousand down. I'm sure, like, Condio was playing the biggest at that time. It was probably getting, like, 20K on, like, a Sunday. So maybe a little bit more. But the market just wasn't – there wasn't as much volume.
Do you remember who told you about FanDuel? Like, do you remember the moment of, like, registering for the site and everything?
Oh, yeah. 2010 – Doppel Sykes, Jay, he works at Fantasy Labs now. We've done Fantasy Leagues forever, and he told me about FanDuel, and yeah, I deposited, and I think like my third or fourth day, I won the biggest tournament, which is $25 to win 1,000, and I was hooked since then. But again, there was just so little volume. In 2010, like, the biggest games were like 109s, really. I think they still had like the $500 games, but no one sat them.
Yeah, like someone – so from what I've been able to gather from, like, talking to Dink and Wiggins and all those guys is that, like, the first time that people started posting, like, 1Ks in the lobby, it was just like, whoa, like, who is – like, this is absolutely insane.
Yeah. Max Dollery, I think, which ended up being obviously Sahil, was one of the first guys. My first $500 game was versus him in college basketball.
In college basketball? What? How great for both you guys?
2011 or 2012, so – yeah, it's come a long ways, and obviously a lot of ups and downs. It's been a roller coaster industry, but very thankful to be a part of it. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun. You've obviously been here since like basically the beginning too. When did you sign up for a FanDuel account or DraftKings?
I actually looked at this the other day. I signed up right at the tail end of 2013, so it would have been that first year. And I was playing on like Draft Day a lot then when Wiggins was running it, because the basketball games used to be really soft there, and then the quick pick stuff. But like, I've been playing long enough to know, like, I had an account on Daily Joust. I played on Draft Street. I played on Star Street, which you were involved with. Oh yeah.
Yeah. I worked there for a year. So I worked at Star Street for 2013, and that was highlighted by the Playboy Mansion, where we gave, because we were on a budget, the wrong guy was given the check before the Playmates left. So we got a picture. And that's when Leone came all the way back in like whatever 21 innings or something ridiculous.
Full stack with the full. He had eight guys from one team and then a one off who scored 2 points. This got brought up in our Slack chat the other day, how he came back to win that event.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, the Playmates had left, everyone was partying. I'd finally like gotten to the Grotto and all that jazz, and then someone's like, "Pete, we have a disaster. This guy might be able to come back and win." And man, that was a crazy moment. It's just crazy how much has transpired since then. So
the amount of fires that were being put out back then, like, here's something that people who play DFS now would have no clue what to do with: those rapid fire games that Draft Day used to run, and then I forget what the Star Street game was
called.
Yeah, the Pick Five. So like, the people would be doing the Roto Grinder show, and they'd be like running through, and they'd be like, okay, we're going to choose these five. And then the second that they would submit, like, everyone else watching would submit at the same time. And then the sites would have to change them because like, they just have so much liability on one side of all of these picks in like their pick 'em games.
Yeah. I made a huge mistake. I put in the wrong Alex Smith and fell asleep in Vegas. This is when you could still play DFS in Vegas. And, yeah, that pick five was very popular with an Alex Smith who wasn't playing. So, yeah, fun times. And hopefully we'll see more of those games as we're now in a more mature sports speculation market.
Yeah, that's actually one of the main things I wanted to talk to you about in this episode, because I think you probably have your finger on the pulse more than anyone. I guess the first thing that people should know about you as a DFS player is you used to grind slates like no one's business. I remember the first time you and I went to go hang out, it was in Vegas, and we were like waiting to go get dinner or something, and you were like, wait, hold on. We have to wait until the Turbo NHL slate locks, because I have to make sure to cancel all my games and make sure everyone I have is starting. Like, you used to really grind DFS, and I guess I would assume, like a lot of other high stakes people, over time you probably grind cash games less and are more focused on tournaments now.
I guess I might be one of the last of the dime breed still putting in the majority of my volume in cash, especially since NFL and NBA makes up a lot of the volume. Golf is obviously really high as well, but that's, I guess, more tournament. But golf and NBA, NBA and football, I'm still grinding like the three-mans and head-to-heads whenever people pick them up. But it's not the same. I used to have anxiety if I missed a slate. And you know, I was just so obsessed with DFS that I was trying to make as much as I could and play every single slate and just not miss any opportunities. And, you know, looking back, it was definitely the right time in the industry in terms of just like the games being soft, and there was a lot of opportunity. But now, I mean,
the information and content was just not as good. Like, the stuff you would need to produce winning cash game lineups, like that stuff in like 2013, 2014 was kind of hard to get.
Oh yeah. And people were just making egregious mistakes. So just even playing guys who were always in was a big edge. You could not be that, like, an average or even below average grinder now would have been one of the best players back then, just because so many people were making just massive mistakes. So there's a huge ROI, and now I'm trying to have a little bit more balanced life and focusing on some other things, but DFS is still a big part of my life. And yeah, golf season's going well, and I'm excited for the fall, which to me now the big thing is just focusing on like the peak of seasonality, which is really, you know, October, right when football starts, through like January. So the rest of the year, I try to have a little more balance, family time, golf time, et cetera.
Right. So I think the average player, though, like the average person, like the average Fantasy Lab subscriber, the average person who's like playing DFS sort of recreationally, but like, you know, they want to try and turn a profit. I think that guy is probably more interested in tournaments now. Like, would you generally agree with that assessment?
Of course, as you should be. That's where the biggest opportunities are. Cash games have gotten really efficient. We saw DraftKings recently changed the VIG on the high stakes games. Like, stuff like that's going to be necessary for, you know, people to be able to survive. Just because the market's gotten so much more efficient. You know, people have gotten collectively so much better, and cash games are becoming more and more, I don't think they'll ever be solved per se, but there's more consensus, and the edges are much, much smaller. So tournaments, there's game theory. It's more fun. People love the lottery type payouts. The tournaments keep growing, and it's obviously something that makes like DFS, in my opinion, sustainable. I think like a millionaire maker for like the Masters, like DFS is like a perfect game. Football has a lot of utility, but I think people are going to love to do that. Even when the other options to, you know, just traditional sports betting to the hybrid games I see coming, there's just much more enticing factors about GPPs for almost everybody.
Yeah, like grinding out like a 6% ROI just is like, not only does that not sound desirable, but it's not like a very good selling point for your industry. Like, I don't think DraftKings or FanDuel, like, I don't really think that those, I don't think they want those to be their customers, right? Like, they want the people chasing the first prize, because there's like more, the money gets more evenly distributed, like amongst the players on the site that way.
Yeah, and once you have one big score, like, if someone tastes that, they're going to be hooked for a long time. And it's obviously super fun. And like, from an entertainment value perspective, of like, you ever have yourself in that sweat, that's like why you play. So it makes sense. And it's hard. I mean, 6% ROI is a great ROI in cash games.
Definitely. Like
the way it's trending. Yeah. So, you know, people initially kind of the moneymaker effect, where there's that, you know, I could become a professional DFS player. A lot of the top guys advocated playing cash, and there was an edge. And now that's just, not the case. It's a totally different ecosystem, and tournaments are where it's at.
Yeah, I mean, you just
at
don't.
Ruby.
Yeah.
Showdown King.
The Showdown King. I mean, you just don't hear that stuff on podcasts anymore. Like, on the, like, when I come on the Fantasy Labs podcast or whatever, you know, we're talking tournament strategy, and when we're doing the Swolecast, like, no one really wants to talk about cash games, because it just feels, a lot of it does feel maybe not solved, but just like, you know, you maybe have a few choices and you run stuff through the optimizers and you weigh your options based on that, but there are like a lot more complex decisions to be made based off of, you know, all these potential outcomes for tournaments, and then leveraging the ownership. Like, it's much more fascinating to talk about potential tournament outcomes than it is to be like, okay, Matt Ryan is the cash game quarterback, and then you're playing this cheap running back, you're stacking him. And like, it is just much more of like a game theory conversation, which I find to be more interesting.
Yeah, there's no doubt it's way better content, and I think it's just way more fun for most people. I'm just still grinding a little bit of the cash games, but I definitely, you know, I would not advise anyone getting into DFS to focus on that. You should be focusing on tournaments for sure.
Yeah, I think I'll always grind cash for NFL and for NBA, especially because like at like $1, $2, $3, and $5 games, people are still putting out like mathematically bad lineups, especially in basketball. But like, I'm very curious your thoughts, like projecting DFS 5 years, 10 years out. Like, kind of what are some of the far-off projections you would have for what the game looks like, you know, 5 years from now?
I think it's going to be more and more of the lottery-type payouts. I think those are the best contests. And we'll see more millionaire makers and things of that nature. I do think traditional betting and the hybrid games and potential for different forms and different types of games to come out in the next 5 years makes it really tough to project. But I do think there will always be a place for these really big tournaments, and NFL and golf in particular, I think those are the sports that lend themselves best to DFS.
I think there's like honestly like undiscovered potential with golf DFS. Like if the viewing audience for golf gets a little higher, obviously, which I think there's definitely a correlation between the popularity of DraftKings golf and increased viewership and interest in professional golf. I don't even know if anyone would really argue that, but I think there are like just the, you know, pick six golfers in a salary cap is like fun and interesting and I think profitable for a lot of people in daily fantasy golf. But I think there's like, there has to be some sort of game type that, you know, increase, like there's got to be more to be done with golf for DFS, I think.
Yeah, and they're trying. They're doing the round by round stuff and we're seeing that be cut up into even shorter slates. And yeah, ultimately golf is like the best thing to speculate on. You should be able to, you know, what are they going to, what's Tiger going to get on this hole? You get big bonus for a birdie. Is he going to hit right. The fairway? Like there's so many natural spots to be able to bet on golf. So I expect golf to grow and they get it. The PGA Tour understands gambling and golf go hand in hand. And I think it's going to be a huge growth sport, you know, betting DFS, basically any way you can speculate on it.
Yeah. I something I would be really interested in doing would be like more best ball golf type stuff. I know that the draft app has it, but just having like a built like even DFS over like maybe like the majors on DraftKings or something where it's tied to a salary cap instead of a draft, that would be something I would be really interested in. Just more ways to wager on the outcomes of golf. But another thing that I wanted to talk to you about, and we've touched on it a little bit here, is the changing stuff with the legality of sports betting. So give me like sort of the elevator corporate action network statement on just how you see this stuff playing out in the United States, like over the next 2-3 years.
Whew, that's a good question. I guess from another lens, it's very similar. I did some lobbying here in Colorado and it's definitely a state by state thing. Now that PASPA has been reversed. And in Colorado, which I think is a good, a lot of states are doing this, but what I really liked about what Colorado does, it's using the revenue from sports betting for water projects. So water projects are a huge thing in Colorado. The infrastructure is really a big part of not only our water system, but California and some other states. So leveraging the revenue is something that all these states are aware of. And I think we've seen that with marijuana across the country as well. Like, people are doing these vices and the best selling point is, you know, instead of having it in the black market, have it be regulated, make money off of it and put that money towards things that are clearly beneficial to everyone. So that's the encouraging thing. I mean, we've already seen how mature the market is in Europe and the rest of the world. Hopefully the United States catches up very quickly. It's moving fast. And really just a state by state thing. So I'm excited about Colorado and I think it's like 15 or 16 other states now. And, you know, in 5 years, I imagine the majority of the states will be there and it's just going to be a big part of our society. I mean, it's my favorite.
It already is like such a big part of our society. Like it really is so crazy that the United States took so long to move on something like this, considering that it was like just a very widely accepted part of our society. Like, I don't really know anyone that would be like, what's gambling? That's illegal. Like, I don't even know if people really thought of it as illegal. They just thought of it as more difficult because you had to do it with, you know, kind of somewhat.
Bookies and offshores. Yeah. So it's just like you're forcing the public to deal with, you know, more bad actors and the money is staying underground. So I just think it's inevitable. It's a good thing. And we'll see a lot of progress. I mean, there's a ton of money that's pouring into the space and a lot of people want to, you know, be the picks and shovels, the media side. There's just opportunity for everyone. Obviously, there's going to be huge businesses on the operator side, and it'll be good to have America catch up to the rest of the world.
I think one of the interesting things about what you talked about with the much more mature markets in Europe is that, like, first, like, everyone in the United Kingdom has a sports betting account. Like, they have the, you know, the Paddy Power app on their iPhone or whatever. Like, and it's just a very accepted day-to-day part of their lives. And I think what is also sort of interesting is that it's like viewed as a compliment to the entertainment product over there. Like, I don't know if people over there, and maybe you would have more insight on this, are seemingly as serious about, like, you know, making super plus EV wagers or trying to beat the getting closing line value all the time. And I actually think that probably is why that market is so liquid over there, because a lot of the people who are putting money into the system are not stressing so much about getting, you know, like 56%, like, you know, beating the VIG or whatever.
Yeah, I've listened to a lot of, you know, since this has come out, I've listened to a ton of podcasts and tried to consume as much content as I can about how the rest of the world is handling it. And it's fun to hear some of these operators and bookmakers talk about how important, you know, the experience, the customer service, the relationship, because at the end of the day, you're exactly right. What makes betting, you know, such a good thing overall, in my opinion, is the added entertainment to what, in my opinion, I think professional sports are the best entertainment in the world. So you're enhancing something that, you know, sports is good for society. People love it from an entertainment perspective, and the gambling really enhances it. So, I think a lot of these bookmakers and operators, some of them are going to compete on price, but other are going to compete on just really good customer experience. And we'll see if that, you know, becomes a big part of the U.S. as well. I think these media companies, DraftKings, FanDuel, are taking what they've learned from DFS, and they're trying to apply a lot of those same things to sports betting. And we'll see as the market matures here, kind of what strategies win and what operators are most prominent in the States.
I think one of, like, the most interesting things I've learned when looking into the markets in Europe is, like, so for example, like, the top sports writers in Europe, like, just like name a guy who's like wrote books about soccer or golf over there, or, you know, like guys who are on like big podcasts, like for The Guardian or the big newspapers over there, they're all comfortable, like, in a setting talking about, like, oh, you know, I bet $5 on this soccer team to win this soccer team, or this guy to score the first goal or whatever. And big American sports writers, I guess maybe you could argue like Bill Simmons is one of the biggest American sports writers, but like Bob Ryan has probably never placed a bet in his life. You know what I'm saying? Or the, who's the guy from Denver with the crazy hair who's always on around the, yeah. Like, I don't know if that guy's ever placed a bet in his life. And I just think that's like a really interesting contrast between the two markets.
Yeah, it's a big opportunity. And, you know, if you're listening to this, you're probably into sports betting content or DFS content, and there's a huge opportunity. And I think that's just going to be commonplace with media down the road. Everything's going digital, and, you know, gambling is going to be a huge part of, you know, the conversation, as it should be. I mean, that's the most organic fun, you know, people love that, like, your opinion versus mine, and you can bet on it. So then you can recap it, and it's just a natural thing. So I assume mainstream media will become much more comfortable talking about betting, and there's a huge opportunity as just content in general splinters. So we're seeing a lot of people go after that, and I'm excited. I think it's going to be a really good thing.
Yeah, it's already started a little bit. Fox Sports 1 has their show with Cousin Sal and Clay Travis. And then ESPN just launched one, the Daily Line, I think is what it's called.
Daily Wager, I think, right?
Daily Wager, yeah. So yeah. I think it definitely is. Like, what I definitely need is, like, you know, the Fox Sports Sunday morning pregame show to be discussing, like, the lines and the totals. And, like, Al Michaels will always, like, sort of reference it towards the end. Then he's like the one guy who would always reference it on the football broadcast. But yeah, I think it's just a much more enjoyable experience when we can just all acknowledge this thing that we all are tying to this game that we're watching.
Yeah, and we're seeing it more in the Super Bowl, and football is so good. I mean, football has so many natural pauses. In-game betting should just absolutely explode. Yeah. It's going to be awesome. You know, just hearing stories about people winning money in DFS, like, every play matters, every touchdown matters, and we'll see all those guys start talking about it. Like, that's how every game should be introduced, like, as a starting point with, here's the spread, here's the total. Now we can get into some maybe betting analysis, but our general analysis as well, and that's how people should be thinking about the games.
Yeah, and I mean, football is such big business that it being so perfect, like, if you had to choose one sport to be perfect for wagering, like, it would probably be football, like I think it'll be, like, very helpful if the league develops a symbiotic relationship with gambling. I hope that the people with more say than Roger Goodell there have that viewpoint, because things will be like, I think the progress that it seems imminent would be slowed down by like big decision makers in the NFL being anti-gambling.
They love it. They try to put on an act that they don't. Just be progressive like the NBA, the PGA Tour, the NHL.
Right.
It's all happening. And I think the NFL's like public stance of being anti-gambling is going to go away. They've always wanted to make sure the integrity with air quotes is, most important. And they've always loved gambling and they still do. And I think they'll publicly admit to that sooner rather than later.
All right. So now we need to shift focus a little bit onto a topic near and dear to both of our hearts. As we are recording this right now on Wednesday, June 26th, the price of Bitcoin has soared over $13,000 and might actually go to $14,000 while we are recording this. So this is really as high as Bitcoin has been since the bull run of like Thanksgiving to Christmas of 2016. How are you feeling during this bull run?
Yeah, 2017 was crazy, and this bull run is it feels a little better, honestly, because there's been a lot of utility and a lot of the bad actors in the crypto space have been sorted out. And I made tons of mistakes in crypto. I know a lot of DFS and sports guys got into touting crypto, and honestly, we were all very fortunate, or not all of us, but a lot of people in sports, poker, or whatever, were fortunate to be exposed to Bitcoin because it had utility in that for them, whether betting offshores or playing poker.
Yeah, how much better could guys in poker run than having to buy a bunch of Bitcoin, just to protect their assets when it was worth $400?
Right. So that was my introduction to crypto, was needing the coins for speculating on sports. But over time, I've gotten really into it. And last year, 2017, we were talking a lot about it. And the one thing, I feel good about relative to, 2017, where I exhibited a lot of the, same behaviors of greed and, the more speculative behavior that a lot of the actors in the space were doing. It feels a lot better now. And relative to this podcast, one thing I'm really excited about with cryptocurrency and just blockchain technology is how it can be used in prediction markets. So Augur's, one of the big projects.
Yeah, Augur and Predict It, very cool stuff.
Yeah. And I think there's still a lot of issues with those projects and they need to mature and have a better user experience. But blockchain technology makes a ton of sense for sports betting, for DFS. When you can have blockchain technology basically eliminate the need to pay a third party, 5 to 10%, it makes a whole lot of sense and there's a lot of utility for the people in the market. So I'm excited. We'll see what happens with Bitcoin. It's crazy. 50% up in the last 7 days. I'm just trying to be cognizant of some of the things that I learned in the past. I'm always thinking about Warren Buffett's quote, be fearful when others are greedy, be greedy when others are fearful. So it's just weird. Everyone right now is in a unique situation where there's just this crazy appreciation in an asset class. So what are your thoughts, Davis? I always like to ask, when talking about crypto, I like to ask more questions. What are your thoughts on the space right now?
So crypto is a very unique position for me because I didn't play a ton of online poker, but I do like to speculate on sporting events online. So I also was sort of amongst the class to get lucky and buy some when it was worth less than $500. So I had a little bit before the bull run and then kind of the first bull run and then that first ramp up, to 10K and pass, I was also accumulating then. And, like a lot of other people in this space, I got a little greedy, didn't like overextend myself or anything, but when Bitcoin was on the cover of the New Yorker and, the top six apps in the Apple App Store were all like exchanges or the Google Authenticator or whatever, there were a lot of sell signals and I didn't sell anything. And I didn't sell any Ethereum. I didn't sell any BET. I just kept it all. This time I am going to treat those assets a little bit differently. I am like I guess what in the crypto space would be called a true believer in Bitcoin. I do think that it is like this legitimately revolutionary asset. And I don't really have any intention on selling any of that, but like I have, extra Ethereum that I don't really believe in the utility for that I am looking to offload. Like once it gets to a comfortable profit standpoint, but I also think that what you're saying about this run feeling different is pretty accurate. It doesn't feel like this is a ton of like retail buying. Like it doesn't feel like this run is powered by like a lot of college kids like buying $75 of Bitcoin for the first time. This feels like much more powered by like institutional investing, and it feels like it feels a little bit less volatile to me intuitively.
Right. Well, I don't have enough intel to, you know, speak really well about some of the underlying most important things about Bitcoin. I know I've seen some things about like the transaction costs and how many transactions it's doing now. And I try to pay attention, you know, the how the halving that's coming up in 2020 is a factor that a lot of people point to. You see endowments like when Yale and Harvard, when that money's coming in, it's good. And there's more adoption from financial institutions, which is interesting. So we'll see. The one person that I've been very fortunate in, one other story about crypto, Jonathan Bales has had
the best Bales goat.
Yeah, which I think most people in general are going to make mistakes. Like if I was just trying to trade Bitcoin, I think I would be pretty poor at it, even though I know a lot of the rules about not being emotional and trying to take like a more objective math-based approach. The reality is I'd fall victim to my emotions more so than I would like to think. Bales, he's a psychology major and someone who's always just sought really big payoffs, has had just really good intuition with crypto. And I think he likes making bets on irrational behavior. And that's what we kind of saw in the crazy bull run up in 2017. And this one just feels a little different. And, you know, he's been right about this as well. But the only lucky moment, the luckiest moment in crypto for me was with Bales. We were in Vegas for AFC and NFC championship game in like 2018, so like January, and we were at a craps table, and all the dealers and everyone was talking about all the, like the bags they were holding and buying, and we're like, okay, when the casino employees and every single person that's just playing craps is talking about all the crypto assets, probably a good time to sell. So for the most part, I've just held, but that was one of the big sell signals that I was fortunate to be with Bales. And I do think there's some people who have good intuition in trading this stuff. And I agree with you long term. I'm really hopeful that Bitcoin remains a big project and something that, you know, ultimately is just digital gold. I think that's wasn't necessarily the intent of Bitcoin, but that seems to be the direction it's going.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. And like, if I was like needing money for something right now, like if I was buying a house or I wanted to buy a new car or whatever, I would feel pretty comfortable taking profits from Bitcoin right now. And I would think, I can take some of this money out and the rest of it's not going to disappear. I don't think Bitcoin's, you know, I don't think it's going back to zero or whatever. I got intuitively lucky in another way. I listened to this podcast called Coin Talk Show, and Aaron Lammer and Jay Kang host it. And they did, for the longest time, they called the absolute bottom of Bitcoin $3,300, and they called it the Kang line. And it finally hit it. Not even that long ago, I think in February. And when it finally hit there, both of the hosts of the show were like, all right, we're going to buy some more. And at that point I was like, it's not going to get, like, Bitcoin's not going to zero. I will get this money back. So I bought like a decent chunk at 3,300, and I've just been writing that up now. And I think both of our stories point to something, which is that you just kind of have to get lucky with this stuff or be really intelligent like Bales. Cause a lot of it is these markets are so young and, you know, these are just not mature markets. So predicting it is very difficult.
Yeah. And one thing I do have high conviction on relatively that's applicable to DFS, my story, your story, crypto, everything. We're young. And when you're young, you have a lot of time on your hands and you can afford to take these huge risks. You know, if you're retired and had like a nest egg that you're sitting on, Bitcoin is a much tougher asset to add to your portfolio. When you're young and you have a lot of time and you've proven that you're able to make money, you can take really big risks. Quitting your job, playing DFS, getting into sports betting, starting a company, investing in crypto. All those things are, you know, calculated risks that you're more suited to take when you are younger, have a longer time horizon. And if you don't have like a family or anything too, that's another factor. So
yeah, like I'm in a great spot to let it ride right now because I have very little consequence to letting it ride.
Exactly. So that's something I think that has been a really good lesson through playing DFS and poker and getting into all this stuff. you know, trying to focus on different investments now. It's interesting just understanding time horizon. And really the cool thing about big risks, especially when you're young, is how powerful compounding can be. So those are things I'm focused on now, and we'll see, man. This crypto stuff is just absolutely wild.
I think you did just touch on maybe one of the number one things I wish that I could communicate to people, which is that if you are in a space in your life where you have enough privilege to not really worry about going broke, and you know, you'll always have something, you'll always have a job, you'll always have people who are there for you to take care of you, there, people do not take enough risk, both with their career, with their investments, with their time preference. Just people tend to avoid taking those risks because it makes them uncomfortable. And I would advise you to ignore that, assuming you have, you know, reasonable backup options.
Yeah, it's really getting a little philosophical, but people trade in their time for safety where they're truly not that happy. They're right at a corporation and they're just kind of grinding for quote unquote the American dream. And I don't think people think about what they're really trying to do with their time, because that's the most valuable asset we have. And maximizing that to make yourself and the people you love happy as possible, that's what you should be striving to do. So when you're young and you have all this time horizon and you have the ability to make money for a long stretch of time, you should be taking on big risks, especially if people aren't dependent on you.
Right. Yeah, I think that that's very well said. So now we're gonna change directions a little bit to something you love to talk about. I think maybe the thing I've heard about you the most amount of times is that you're bullish on self-driving cars. This is like a well-known Peter Jennings fact. So first, I would love to allow you to give your position on being a bull on self-driving cars, and then give the people one other thing that CSU Ram 88 is bullish on these days.
Yeah. So I've been bullish on self-driving cars for a long time. I distinctly remember a conversation with Brandon Adams in either 2014 or 2015 up in the mountains. We were on a ski trip. And I talked about how soon I thought self-driving cars would be integrated into our society. And, you know, BA is right about so many things. And I listened to him. I've been very fortunate to learn from him as an investor. But one thing I got right and he wasn't right about was self-driving cars. And to me, it just makes so much sense. You know, one of my best friends died in high school in a big car crash. Two of the guys that were in the car both passed away. We're on my basketball team. And, you know, you just, as you get older, you just see more and more people, you know, become victims of these car accidents, especially with drunk driving and texting and driving. It's actually the most likely way, Davis, you or I to die, assuming we're healthy, right? Before we turn 40 yeah. is a car accident. So it's extremely dangerous. Planes are doing much more complicated. You know, they're going much faster. They're flying. They're exponentially more safe than cars. And those are essentially automated. So it just seemed like a no-brainer to me that ultimately transportation is going to change a lot. And I think in our lifetime, we're going to see really cool stuff. We're going to be able to travel in cars or different transportation devices and be really productive in those, be on our phones, get work done. I just think it's going to change a lot, and self-driving cars are imminent. One thing that's correlated, one of the new things I've been trying to invest in, and if you're listening to this and have any exposure to industrial kitchens, I'm really bullish on basically restaurants all getting put into, or a lot of restaurants not having a storefront, having a huge industrial space, just making the food with all the sales being you know, driven to someone at their home. So just basically banking on food delivery continuing to grow, and a lot of these restaurants focusing more on just getting that food out there. And ultimately, I think that'll be self-driving cars and robots that have the food made and then it's delivered to people at their homes. So that's something I've been trying to bet on. And I know a lot of some of these bigger, you know, high volume food chains are banking on that as well.
I mean, you're speaking directly to me, because one, I would love to be able to drive my car and just like be on my phone and watch baseball games and just like not care. And two, I love to have food delivered to my house without having to leave to do it. So these are two things that speak directly to my spirit.
Friend of the podcast, Andy, brought it up. I've made a couple investments around it, trying to do more, but it's a trend that's happening. More and more food is being delivered. There's I think there's a need for restaurants. I think people still love the experience, and that's where I envision human beings always being part of the process, because it's, you know, something that we all value, or a lot of people value. But for a majority of meals,
going out to eat.
Yeah, so there's still like the experience of like going out, spending time at a meal with your loved ones and your friends. But the majority of meals, I think people are going to want delivered, and we're seeing it with groceries already. So that's something I'm trying to bet on, and it correlates with self-driving cars. I mean, I think the cars will be automated, and robots will be a big part of all this stuff.
I want to invest in this too. This seems so much better
Someone needs to reach out to us, because I've been trying to deploy capital. It's definitely challenging.
Well, shit, man. I'm in on this. I would love nothing
more. A lot of big investors are. So a lot of the projects that are happening are oversubscribed. It's
big. Yeah. $1.5 million or lose our email. I'm in, man. Anything that leads to like further automation, I'm in, because I just so very clearly see our world going that direction.
By the way, just tweeted, just tweeted, Mike McDonald, Bank of Timex, just tweeted, shorted Bitcoin for my first time ever. Wish me luck.
Wow.
That makes me nervous.
It would be very hard for me to ever take a bath lifetime on crypto, considering how lucky I've gotten here and there. But that does make me nervous, because Timex is one of the sharpest dudes in like that I've ever met.
Yeah, for sure. But just relevant. It's interesting times that we're living in right now, Davis.
Yeah, it is. Very interesting. I mean, human society is changing more rapidly and more dramatically, like every year, like year over year, more so than any other time in human history. Like 20 years ago, phones were something you used to communicate with your voice. And now, like, if you're more than 5 feet away from your phone, you feel like extreme anxiety. And that's just the way it goes, which is crazy. Yeah. But it's true. Yeah.
Deep rabbit hole, all the technology stuff for sure.
Yeah. All right. Last thing I wanted to talk to you about, again, something you and I both really care about, is the $3.5 million draft championship. I've only done like 3 or 4 teams. I don't know the exact number, because I'm kind of waiting for them to launch the mini best ball so I can just jam in as many teams as I want. But I know that you're definitely going to cap that one out at 150.
Yeah, of course. And I'm waiting. I actually drafted 0 of those. I've been focused on the shorter, like the 3, 4, and 6 mans. I'm doing some 8 mans as well. But yeah, I've done almost 600 best ball drafts already this year, hoping to get to, you know, thousands of them over the summer. And there's some big inefficiencies, and I'm really excited about kind of what's going on. I think that's for sure the future of fantasy football, like managing your team.
Bigly. Yeah.
And I know I'm biased because I like to play DFS, but like, it's just so tilting, like having to go to like the waiver wire, like, I don't know. I like drafting and being done, because that's the best part of, you know, season long football. And I love these new best ball formats. And obviously it's exploded, and that tournament having $1 million to first is awesome. So I do have some theories. I'm losing out on some ADP, but the benefit of waiting is injuries. And I think there could be some big injuries, big suspensions that open things up to some opportunity in the short term. So I'm going to wait a little bit longer, but I recognize there's some really big edges in some of the drafts that have already been done.
There definitely is an edge. Especially if you had inside info on Tyreek Hill, now would be a great time to draft. If you had inside info,
I have like zero Tyreek Hill, and that's how I get absolutely burned. If I'm banking on him being suspended, if he's not suspended, then I'm in really big trouble, because he's a popular pick, and I get it. He has some of the best distributions, and you know, if he plays even 8 games, which is, you know, very likely, he's still going to have a lot of contribution to your team. But in like these shorter drafts, I'm still taking some other guys ahead of him, and he's a very popular pick.
So that's interesting to me that you like to do the 3 and 5 mans. Like, do you have, is that like an intuition thing? Have you done like some analysis of your, like what leads you to play those leagues? Cause I greatly prefer the 12 man leagues.
Yeah. So the 3, 4, and 6 man leagues go the fastest, and they're the highest stakes. So my goal is just to invest as much money as I possibly can while being able to maintain, so I'm doing all these drafts, and it just takes, it is time consuming. So I'm just trying to maximize my stakes. And I do think there's some really big inefficiencies. The four-mans have really taken off this year, and it's winner take all. So there's kind of that game theory stuff. And I think people are making some really big mistakes with roster construction, just other things. So
you willing to give away any of the secret sauce? Can we get –
sure. I mean, I talked about it a little bit at the Action Network, and we're doing some more content there. So, yeah, I think tight end and tiers are just – so tight end, for example, it's shifted now, but, like, Kelsey's the first pick in these four-mans a lot now and the first pick in three-mans. And before, I was getting him in, like, the second and third round. Same with Kevin Ertz, and I think Howard is right there in that first tier of tight ends. So I'm prioritizing those four guys. Those are my biggest positions. And then I'm just loading up on these stud receivers. I think people in general are overvaluing running back. You can only play two of them. It's a guaranteed 25% of your overall scoring, but it maxes out at 37.5%. And if you look at the distribution of scores last year, it's only about 30% of your scoring comes from running back. And in these leagues, people are drafting seven of them sometimes, which is a huge percentage of your overall roster.
Yeah, no, bigly bad to do seven running backs.
Yeah, I used to get Kyler Murray every time in the last round.
Yeah.
He's moved up a ton. There's just certain things that you can pick up on. Looking at the distribution of players, an Amari Cooper shout out. I have a ton of him. And I think in like a 12-man, Amari's value is actually not as high. Like, guys right next to him, like Thielen, Keenan Allen, are so consistent that you need that kind of scoring, especially when you have a thinner roster with 12 players. But in the shorter rosters, when you're getting, you know,
the spiked seven weeks studs, are so much more important.
The spiked weeks are so valuable. So Amari, if you look throughout his career, even when he wasn't that successful, he had that awful year where he burned me in 2017. He still had that one huge game last year. He had just like the most dream splits in terms of you know, his great games and then bad games. So targeting players like that's an advantage. And I'm just excited for the rest of summer and drafting, and we'll see. Tyreek Hill is a short. Todd Gurley's a short for me. And actually have a little less Zeke Elliott than most. So those are kind of the stud players that I'm fading so far.
Wow. There we go. Peter, this was everything I hoped of. You were a great guest, man.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I've listened to almost all of these. My most recent favorite episode, I think, was with Rufus, who's been really insightful. He's doing a lot more content right now. And it's fun to hear some of these sports bettors, DFS players, and keep up all the great work, Davis.
Yeah, he's fighting. Rufus is fighting the good fight. That dude has one of the best Twitter timelines ever.
He really is. So shout out to Rufus. And it's an honor being on the TakeCast, dude.
All right, man. Everyone, listen to all Peter, tell all the people where the NFL content's going to be.
We have NFL content at the Action Network. Obviously, you guys are doing great stuff at Daily Roto, and there's tons of great content out there. Obviously, I'm biased towards the Action Network. We're going to have a ton of best ball content. Sean Corner, the odds maker, does so many good things. His projections will be at Fantasy Labs. We'll have Adam Levitan's ownership projections again. I'll be doing some content. So, excited for football, and there's a lot of good stuff that you'll be able to find out there.
Beautiful.